show. I'm Lina Mirmont with my Lina Life show, having another very impressive, beautifully gifted musician. He is a singer, songwriter, and a composer. His name is R.F. Horn. We just finished a little clarification of his name just before going on the air, because I felt somewhat depleted by having only R.F. for his first name. And with some obvious modest quality, Mr. R.F. Horn confessed to me that his first name is Ron. So that's how I'm going to address him on the air. And then during the course of the program, of course, he will tell us where he can be found as full name. And we will be listening to his very, very special, impressive music performances. And to start with, I wanted to welcome Ron to our program. And perhaps ask a little non-traditional question. Your sense of rhythm, I understand, was well-defined since you've been very little boy. So what about your rhythm in life? How musical rhythm and life rhythm correspond to each other in your life?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I haven't had that one thrown my way yet. My everyday life and my musical life are a contradiction in terms, for the most part, to say the least. I've been mostly a blue-collar guy all my life, and the music has been off and on since I was a teenager. I don't really know how to answer that question. You've stumped me already, and we're only 10 seconds into the interview.
Let me confess certain things. I feel you feel much more comfortable when you're performing in a genuine sense of the word, not necessarily being on stage, but when you're singing, when you're speaking out through musical phrases. Somehow I feel making musical phrases is so much more comfortable than to make speeches or to make verbal presentation. How much I'm off?
I don't really think you're off at all. I think it really depends on the individual. And me personally, I'm equally terrified speaking in public as I am performing in public. The whole key is to not let people know that you're terrified. You have to go up there and own what you're doing. You need to go up there and be confident and self-assured and take all that negative feelings that you may have and take all that terror and just kind of step on it and keep it at bay. I know there are performers out there that just love being on stage, and it's their whole life, and it's they're unhappy unless they're on stage. Me, I have never been that much of an attention getter. it's all part of my contradiction that I live every day. I love to sing. I love to perform. I would say I like to write. Writing is not what I consider my strong point. I'm stronger with melodies and whatnot. If you were to meet me on the street, more times than not, you probably wouldn't even know I was a musician.
Well,
I think that's the simplest way to answer that question.
I'll take a little issue with that, because looking at the handsome man on your DVD, which I was happy to receive from your manager, I would say you do look artistic, you look somewhat subdued, and you look as if you truly emotionally know what you're doing, but indeed sometimes have to have a bit of a uplifting moment to express it as free as you desire.
Well, I appreciate that, Lena, and that's definitely one way you could describe it. Unlike many, many other men in the universe, I have a lot of trouble expressing my true, deep emotions on a day-to-day basis. Personally, I find I can express how I really feel deep down through music. I prefer very emotionally, overwrought music, if you will. I like to have some kind of an impact. You know, I'm not a big fan of bubblegum mainstream number one hit, you know, like to sell to the mainstream type of music that's out nowadays. I'm very fond of the old school way of doing things. I think it's okay for a man to be a man, but at the same time be emotionally secure in his identity, if you will. I think it's good when a man can express himself to the world, let them know that there is, you know, there's deep water there. But it doesn't mean at the same time that you have to, you know, cry over spilt milk and, you know, explain to the whole universe how deep and how complicated we all are. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Very much so. Extremely eloquent, very sincere. Do appreciate this. You hit in some sensitive points, in fact, regarding just a general musical performance. I particularly have a classical background, and boy, this idea of perfection and idea of a discipline almost makes you feel immobile sometimes when you go on stage, because it looks at it's nothing will be even good enough compared to those giant composers you're supposed to perform. So I personally, in fact, developed my own way of senses, my own way of introduction, stage performance. I feel that any stage performance is a very courageous moment in everybody's life, whether it's more successful or less. I think mistakes, if they are honest, they're absolutely beautiful, expresses most sincere feelings. And I feel that a lot of those nervous feelings we get, we don't really deserve to have. And from what you're telling me, you did go through your own journey, through your own emotional search, and engaging in on the stage, actually very crystal clear points. I think you're communicating with the world at your own right.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think that's very well said, and I think that speaks volumes to who you are. You seem to. You clearly have a deep understanding of what probably most musicians go through.
Yes, and I'm literally dying to put first songs of this program so people finally will hear who you are, because that is better than any words. But I just wanted to insert one little moment of the anticipation of your music. It is beautiful dissonance between your slightly, I would say, charmingly subdued personality and outside, and such incredible generosity and lyricism, which is an outside. And with this overture, we are going to hear your song, which called Mama Tried. And then we will talk about this. So
great.
I will tell my listeners that we are going to hear a song by R.F. Horn, which has name Mama Tried.
Was a lonesome whistle blowing, and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one changed my mind but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my mama seemed to know what lay in store. In spite of all my Sunday learning, towards the bed I kept returning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, cause Mama apologize. Dear old daddy pressed his soul, left the mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better. But her pleas night and night. That leaves only me to blame, cause Mama tried. It's been 20 years and change since I brought my mama shame. She never did give up on her baby boy, but she passed away today, and I am so ashamed. I never did bring mama any joy. And I turned 41 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading night and night, and that leaves only me to blame, cause Mama tried.
What a beautiful, beautiful music. They absolutely touch of country song genre. But I do not want to impose my comments. Ron, tell us a little bit about the history of that song.
I'm sorry, Lena. I think I've lost you. Your volume has gone in half of what you were before.
I see. Can you hear me a little better now?
Yeah, that's better.
It's
great.
Better now. Well, what
yeah,
I
that's
was,
funny.
What I was going to say that it is just a very beautiful lyric with a touch, in my just a subjective personal feeling, a touch of a little country music genre. And I understand that there is some history of this song. It was performed and written by Merle Haggard as an original composition. And then you stepped in and you refill this song with your feelings. So tell us a little bit about the history of that song.
Well, the first time I heard that song was obviously many, many years ago. I can't quote exactly what year it came out. I think it was something like 62, maybe 63 in that ballpark. And that song always spoke volumes to me. And I can't honestly say that the song itself has a direct impact on me. I've never done time in prison, and I have a fairly good relationship with my mother. But it spoke volumes to me because of where I came from, and I know a lot of people that don't have good relations with their parents, let alone just their mother. And I grew up in a bad part of town in East Vancouver as a teen, and I've always had an affinity for heartfelt country music, as well as other genres, many, many other genres, in fact. But I always felt that as great as Merle Haggard is, and was back then, that I always felt that he kind of cheated everybody because that song was just so short. I didn't feel that the song had been completed in its story. So I took a big risk of being everything from being laughed at to being criticized or ignored from Merle Haggard himself, and maybe not getting the ability or the rights to change the song at all. And musically, it hasn't really been changed. I just changed the arrangements ever so slightly, and I wrote an extra verse just to extend the song. I believe the song is now, 3 minutes and 3 seconds? The original song was 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And I wanted to make the song relevant, or as relevant as I could, for today. Well, I don't know of any songs that are played on the radio anywhere that are only 2 minutes long. So, yeah, that's the crux of it. I've always loved the song. I felt it was too short, didn't finish the story, so I took it upon myself to change it. And Merle Haggard was gracious enough to allow me to do that.
that is certainly a wonderful addition to this, and you remind me a little joke, which unfortunately was a reality, because you measured timeline of the first of original version of the song and then what you add to it. And the joke was that one musician was asked to play a waltz by Chopin that was happened to have a name, 1 minute waltz. That musician happened to play it for 1 minute and a half. So engineer and producer said that it's not a good recording because he played it too long, too slow. So so we have to measure our emotions sometimes by these modern technical expectations. But I wanted to make a bridge and tell you that what you what we just heard sound totally as if you wrote it yourself from the beginning. It is so sincere, it's flowing, and it's so just beautifully warming your soul. The other thing which I want to compliment you, your diction is excellent. I could actually understand the words.
Why, thank you.
Yes.
I think that actually annoys some people. But I also, that's a thing, in my opinion, that has gone to the wayside over the last 25 years, is understanding what the singer is saying to you when they're singing that song. I think diction is extremely important. I mean, it's very easy to get carried away with it. You know, there's a fine line between having somebody understand word for word and then just having the song be ruined. But, yeah, I make a point of trying to make... I like songs that tell stories.
Yes.
That is what makes me happy. That's what I want to try and translate to the world. And to me, it makes very little sense to sing a song that's a deep, meaningful, profound story and have to fight and struggle trying to understand what the artist is saying to you halfway through the song. That just never makes any sense to me. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, the beauty of that particular song is you just picked up on something which I was thinking about, that it is always a little creative competition, whether music written for the lyrics or lyrics for the music. And it's, of course, I would say free choice, free will of the artist. I found in this song is beautiful, invisible balance between two.
Well, yeah, but again, and I appreciate that sentiment, but the reality is I can't take credit for that song. Merle Haggard wrote that song. Merle Haggard is the one that made that song great.
Well, I'm sorry jumping in, but the way you performed it, you made it so convincing that the public really thinking and hearing you more than a previous author. But we do appreciate your honesty.
Well, I'm a lot of things. Ask a lot of people that I know. They'll tell you, but a liar's not one of them. And I don't want to steal credit or try and make out that I'm doing something that I'm not doing. I mean, fundamentally, I'm a singer. That's who I am. That's what I do. And I'm not doing it to try and become rich and famous. I'm doing it because it makes me happy, and I'm hoping that I can translate a little something to people who might want to hear it. I'm doing what any musician wants to do. I simply want to, with the hopes, find some people that are going to appreciate what I'm trying to translate to them. And if I can accomplish that, then I'm a happy guy. I mean, I have no aspirations, to be perfectly honest, to be a mega star sensation. And quite frankly, I think I'm probably too old for that to happen anyway. But if I can make a nice, comfortable career for myself and be happy with what I'm doing with my life, I get up in the morning and be able to do more music, that is my dream.
Well, I jumped into with my a bit of the interruptive intonation when you said that you're too old. We are not going to talk about age and music, because music literally ageless. It is a bit, you know, it's a maybe just a little corny comment, but really is music ageless. And unspoken statistic, in fact, is that whoever plays musical instruments, whoever directs music like conductors, have a very long life. So not only you're too old, you're just hardly there, in my opinion.
All right. I'll agree with that.
In terms of honesty, I would say that we all need to be honest, especially with our emotions. It's not always as simple as it sounds and not as natural as it sounds, because your own emotions can be sometimes the most hurtful. But in the same time, if we do recognize them, and if we have privilege to be a musician or an artist, we know very well what to do with these emotions on an instinctive level. And I believe that you found beautiful channel for your emotions to express this in music, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Well, and again, man, you're making me blush. You can't see that. I'm on the phone. I just don't know what to say to that. It makes me happy that you seem to be liking so much what I've done. Do I know that I'm that? I don't know. I guess I'd have to say I'm just like a lot of other insecure, neurotic artists. We live our lives being constantly insecure about, are people going to like us? Are they going to accept us? Is this good enough? Am I good enough? Do I have the right talent? Do I have the right look? Do I have the right sound? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's very easy as an artist, as I'm sure you know, that we can just pound ourselves right into the ground with all our insecurities and uncertainty. All we can do is project the emotion, the inflection into the music itself, put all of what we are into what we do, and hopefully somebody somewhere will care. That's, in the end, that's all any of us can really hope for as a musician, I think.
Couldn't be better said, and you're absolutely right, and this is, I would say, a philosophical dilemma. We have privilege to be talented and express it to the world, but the price is constant search, doubts, which with some people is very treacherous process, especially if they don't have support system, backbone, you name it. In your case, I understand your parents, whom you very, very graciously thanked in your verbal introduction in your DVD, I'm sorry, your CD. I understand that you felt especially very rare and great needed support from your parents when others didn't give you that much. I somewhat paraphrased your thoughts, but I'd like to ask you to share with us, before we will play your next song, we'd like to know who are your parents and how you felt their impact on your life first and then in your creativity second.
Well, I'd have to say my parents are great people. They both come from the School of Hard Knocks. They're both getting up there now, and they're still dealing with a lot of turmoil in their lives. They've had a lot of pain, a lot of hardship ever since their childhood. And were they the absolute best parents in the whole universe? Probably not. Did they do their absolute pinnacle best to be the best parents they could have been? Absolutely. And that's what I like to focus on. My parents have not, they've always been afraid that I was going to be lost in the world, So a lot of what they've said and done over the years has become negative because they were so afraid for me. So to say what they have done and what they've said in the past, it could very easily be called negative. But to me, everything everyone does in this world, for themselves, to others, it's all about intent, in my opinion. And my parents always did the best they could do for all of their children. And I guess what I'm trying to say fundamentally is everything they've ever done has been out of love and out of fear and out of concern. But a lot of what they've told me over the years has been destructive musically, because they were afraid that I wasn't going to have a normal happy life. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, being a musician, being an actor, anybody in the arts, it's a huge gamble. You know, if you're going to dedicate your whole life to that, you have things like retirement to worry about. You have family. You need to put food on the table for, you know, for that family. Choosing music has always frightened my parents, so it's a big part of why I'm getting on the music later in life, because I finally made a decision that I need to do this. It's going to haunt me till the day I die if I don't actively pursue it on at least some level. Now that I have taken it by the reins, so to speak, my parents are extremely supportive, more so than ever before, because they realize just how important it is to me, and they are very proud of what I've accomplished so far. So yeah, they've helped me out emotionally and financially, for that matter. They've just been great. That's still a summary, because I mean I could go on and on for probably 2 hours about that, which I'm not going to.
We have this very spontaneous dialogue, and indeed I jumped in saying that it is very extraordinary relationship and union, and I am so deeply sure that you had to find your own human nerve to resist their negative and challenging comments regarding your passion and life. This is a great tribute to your wisdom that you felt that they did it out of tremendous love and genuine concern. Being a parent of a very talented musician, I certainly understand their roots and their emotional highways. And I took the same place and the same support conviction they did. But it is extraordinarily challenging on both parents and you as a son and as an artist. Well, on this note, because we know a little bit more about you, the second song cannot be more appropriate with the title of it, which is One Knows. However, I've been corrected that we are going to hear the song which calls No One Knows. So we knew a lot of things about you, but now we will hear the song which called No One Knows, performed by beautifully talented, very unique individual, R.F. Horn.
We'll be right back.
Don't simplify it. I would say from the first song, which was a perfume of very eloquent country-grown rose or other bouquets, we suddenly burst into the symphony of energy of this artistic harshness. I cannot find a better term. And that tells me what kind of a transformations of your emotions you're going on a daily, maybe hourly, maybe minute basis. That's quite a contrast. What is this song all about? What brought this tremendous expression?
Well, it's an angry song, full of angst is what it is to me. The song is very, in case you hadn't noticed, very wide to interpretation. The writer of that song, Nick Olivieri, they had a hit with that song in the 90s. I thought their version was great. You know, the writing was great. I took that song because I felt that the original, it spoke to me in certain ways that I don't feel was translated. I felt that it was a deep, meaningful song that was turned into a pop song that could have been translated better. And I'm probably going to make the original artist, if he ever hears this, angry with me, but, you know, so be it. I mean, I don't expect everyone to like me. That song, to me, is primarily about literally no one knows. They don't know what's going on around them. You know, they can see what's in front of them, and they can call it something else. It's about the deep, profound pain that 99.9% of everyone carries with them every single day of their lives. You know, it's a little bit of everything. It's about loss. It's about confusion. It's about anger. It goes in so many different directions. And quite frankly, it's a little convoluted in a really good way. You know, that's kind of the point to that song to me. It's about having a whole range of mixed emotions, and in the end, having none of them make any sense and not really knowing where you're coming from or where you're going. I don't know if that makes any sense to you or not.
It not only makes sense, but I will be
trying
to make you angry. Because
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Oh, how about now? Are we hearing each other?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I will proceed with my thought because you, I would say, you energized me being frank and even make you feel angry. I hope I can afford this by earning my very genuine and very sincere admiration for your talent and indeed for your personality. So I was thinking of something while I was listening to this song. And I am going to express this thought, which I know controversial, and it only touches on subtle iceberg of that song. Because when you said that no one knows, obviously there is a frustration, there is harshness, there is all collaboration of these emotions. It did bring my thought only in one moment of these emotions to a heavy metal music. And I will say that I know I will make you angry because your genuine and your artistic vision, all eloquence of your phrasing, melody, the meaning of the lyric has nothing to do with the heavy metal. But the only reason I mention this is because heavy metal, personally, to myself, which I know very little about, but when I heard just a few minutes, sometimes you just need that touch of harshness, brought the association with this very aggressive helplessness and somewhat uselessness of musical expression, when only very loud, harshly metallic sound can reach somebody else's soul. So heavy metal did find its place. It's very popular, so obviously people can relate to that, and therefore it does deserve respect for what it is. But it's interesting that that song which we just heard, No One Knows, brought so many emotions in me, so many different multi-level recollections and associations, that even touch of heavy metal found a place in that. I hope I didn't make you angry.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, that ultimately is what I was trying to express. I mean, I found the song to be incredibly manic, if that makes any sense to you. It allowed me to get really in touch with my manic side. I mean, ultimately, that's what the whole point of that song is to me. Now, I can't speak for the writer. I don't know where his head was at when he was writing it. I don't know where anybody's head at when they were composing it. But to me, it was a very manic song full of frustration, angst, anger, and just pain. And I did everything I could to express that vocally. Now, whether it worked, I can't say. I mean, as a musician, it's very hard to be objective about what you're doing yourself.
I tell you, I was dancing in a chair listening to your song because it has this magnificent harmony with a such, obviously, articulated rhythm, but I would say even deeper pulse. This is pulse of emotion, which one sends from the very, very first note. And I'm saying this not because I'm having privilege to speak with you, but because if I would hear that song, let's say driving in a car or being in some kind of a social place, I will turn my ears, but I will turn my soul even stronger. So I wanted to say thank you for writing such a song, especially because it brings a different prism of your personality.
Well, thank you again. But as I said, I simply performed that song. I didn't write that one.
Well, let me give you a little highly personal, highly subjective, a bit of a comment. You know, when you hear it, again, I'm coming from classical background thought. When you're listening to a certain performance and you with a performer, with a music, with a moment of that incredible collaboration between the artist and yourself as a listener, you really forget for a moment that the music was written by someone else. You're really not aware. You don't want to be even aware of that. I do appreciate your honesty. Sometimes you're too honest.
Well, see, the thing is, I mean, I also feel that a lot of people are dismissive of artists because they're doing someone else's material. And I don't feel that that is a fair assessment most of the time because, I mean, I do write. The problem is, in my mind, I haven't written anything that is worth recording as of yet. I mean, yeah, okay, so I did that blurb on Mama Tried, and I'm proud of it because I feel I completed the song. But what I am ultimately trying to do, I am trying to pick songs that speak to me that I can do without destroying the integrity of the original music, without trying to compete with the original song. All I am trying to do is put some emotional impact behind certain songs that I personally feel were a little bit lacking. And I know that's going to make people angry because, hey, well, who are you to say that and blah, blah, blah. And that's fair. I accept that. You know, if people want to be upset with me by saying that, I have no problem with it, and I understand it. But the reality is most songs are redone either because they were great to begin with or because somebody felt they could do a comparable or a lateral move to the original song. I mean, many, many songs have been remade over the last 30 years, and most people think they're original. Now a lot of bands or groups, they allow that belief to continue. They allow people to believe that that song is originally theirs. Personally, I like to be able to sleep at night feeling like a solid guy. I don't want to go around misleading 18, 19-year-old kids who hear a song thinking it's brand new and then them give me the credit for singing something that was written 30 years ago. I am a singer first, a performer second, a writer third. And I have made melodies. I am a musician, but I consider myself a stylist. I'm a vocalist. That's my love. That's my passion. That's my direction. If people are displeased with the fact that I'm not doing all original material, okay, fair enough. I have to accept that, and I'm not going to be upset. I have to own that there are going to people are going to be people that feel that way.
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just was going to say, perhaps it's not much of a displeasing. Again, your classification of your role in music is very admirable. And let me give you just a little bit of a compliment. Not too many musicians are as well as articulate in their humanitarian role as well as their spiritual role, and you are. And I'm sorry I interrupted you. I'd like you to finish your thought, but I just wanted to catch up and to say that this is something which is quite different. There's only one little thing disturbed me, that the world certainly wants to hear your original compositions, not because you have to, but
no,
because you deserve to be heard.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love that thought. I really do. And I like to think I'll have that opportunity to get that original material out to the world. But the reality is, to me anyway, I mean, maybe I'm selling myself short, or maybe I'm just being too cynical. But writing a brand new song, to me, that's not as good as an older song that I can make fresh and new, or make a lateral move on and put myself into it, I'm happy doing that. I'm also happy with the notion of writing something new that would be that great that I feel is valid or worthy to put out into the world. But as of right now, I feel I haven't accomplished that yet. So I'm going after songs that I feel express what I want to express to people. Different takes, different spins. Music has been around for a very, very long time. As you know, you're a classic musician. Now, how many people have you worked with or studied with or played with just for fun? How many of them do new material? Classical musicians, they go after material time and time again because it was brilliantly written, and you as the musician can put your own personal spin on it. You're still playing Tchaikovsky and Beethoven and Mozart. You know, these pieces will never go away. These pieces will never go away because they were written, what, I'm not that much of a historian, say, you know, what, 500-600 years ago, say, depending on what they are, what, Irish backgrounds, I mean, some backgrounds go back further. But just as a generalization, this a lot of these pieces have been around for hundreds of years, and they're still being played because they're that brilliant. So ultimately what I'm trying to do is pay homage to songs that I think are great songs that I am putting myself into to hopefully add a little something to something that's already out there. I just want to sing and perform music that speaks to me. Now, if that material that speaks to me is original, tremendous. If it's a cover, that's fine too. I'm not that fussy about it because ultimately I'm a singer first and I'm a writer second.
What a remarkable observation, historic as a performer and as a human being. It is somewhat a bit philosophical, and when I was talking about your original composition, it's not because for one bit I don't appreciate or not satisfied as a listener to the songs which I already had privilege to listen to. The only the only pushy element is here that I just like you personally, to appreciate yourself in a wider spectrum. And it is almost unthinkable not to see you in a different level and expansion, and that is your own original compositions, maybe which you're humming while you're cooking in the kitchen. I know it is right there, but you are doing tremendous artistic, historic favor to those artists who are very fortunate and privileged to have you as a performer of their compositions. Well, on a personal note, this is a bit of a fantasy, but we just established a new music company here in New York. It's called Music Garden. And perhaps if you're in New York area, we will invite you as a performing artist to perform some of your original compositions. Who knows? Maybe you will be inspired.
That would be great.
So I just wanted to say that before we will hear your last song just on this program, which called Years, I would say that years are coming when Ron's music, his original compositions, will be heard by the world, but only at his own right. So let's enjoy another song, which called Years, and then we will talk about this. Again, my special guest is R.F. Horn, who is singer, who is a writer, and a composer.
see.
I can hear you again.
Yes, we had this interruption, but we would say technical interruption never will create a musical interruption. So I'm going to elaborate and repeat what I said before. I said, I don't know if you and listeners heard, that I wish this song never, never would end. It was just incredible, precious moment of traveling through whatever one will choose to travel, either perfumed woods or magnificent ocean. But you certainly can get into the musical line and augment it to the maximum of emotional abilities. This song was called Years. Is this symbolism, or it is something personal? Could you tell us a little bit about this song?
Well, Years was, I wish I could remember his name, or there was a couple actually that wrote that song originally back, and I think that was written in the 60s, released in the 70s, I believe. Don't quote me on that. That song struck a chord with me when I was young. And as I lived my life and experienced some hardship and pain and misery, like so very many of us do, it just spoke volumes to me as I got older. I was inspired to cover that song almost on a whim. I was afraid to do it because it was originally done by Barbara Mandrell. And I just I decided to say, you know what? Why not do it? It talks to me. I think I can pull it off. I think that song is relevant today as it ever was. I think it will continue to be relevant probably for the next 50 years or more. And I think it speaks to anybody that's had a hard breakup. Anyone that's still carrying a flame for anybody, whether it be a man or a woman, I don't think it's really relevant. I think anybody that's ever experienced tremendous loss is going to relate to that song on some level. That song is definitely one out of three on my album that I'm particularly proud of. I think I translated it fairly well. It was very, very emotional. It was somewhat difficult to record. And I just hope that it's going to talk to somebody somewhere. That song is very, very important to me.
It certainly talked more than just to myself, and as I picked up on those emotions, I just didn't want this song to finish, maybe because personally, for the last 5 years, I had major losses in my life. To lose your parents is some very complex emotions you never can prepare for. And I wanted to thank you, because now you explained to me in a verbal sense, why it was so rich and so fulfilling in its expression. I like to ask you to comment on one probably extremely significant period in your life where perhaps one of the peak of your frustrations and self-doubts took place. And then a person by name Gary Packett stepped into your life, and that was some of your turning points, if I understood this correctly.
Well, that's a big question with several different answers, but I'll try and summarize for you. As I've said and probably pounded into the ground by now, I've had a considerable amount of emotional turmoil and pain in my life, like many, many other people have. And music has always been a great cleansing effect for me. Regardless of how I felt, with even feeling angry or depressed or just sad and blue, whatever you want to call it, my choice of music is, depending on who you ask, is rather antiquated for today's standards. I mean, now that it sounds like I'm diminishing myself, and I really don't want to make it seem that way. Ultimately, what I'm trying to say is a lot of people nowadays, they want fun, energetic, really in-your-face kind of music. I mean, that's the direction we've gone in. I want to do music that's heartfelt and emotional. I want it to be understood that it's okay to be, you know, you can be that man's man, you can be that everyday guy, and still be okay to share emotion. I'm getting a little off the beaten path here, I know. There's just so much I could say in order to answer your question. So I guess in regards to Gary Puckett, when I decided to fully pursue my music, I was having some very difficult times with that. I was racked with self-doubt, and I was completely unsure of everything I was trying to do. I felt ridiculous, in fact, trying to, you know, establish myself as a musician this later in life. And my manager and I, we contacted Gary Puckett from Gary Puckett and the Union Gap. He was, in essence, the only man alive to ever outsell the Beatles back in 1968. He had a string of hits, four exactly, that were tremendous. Well, Gary is still performing to this day, and we contacted him to ask him for the rights because I wanted to cover one of his songs. Well, not only did he get back to us, he was really quite gracious. I can't even put it into words. He, in a way, he saved me because I was prepared to walk away from the singing, the music altogether. And when Gary got back to us, and got back to me specifically, he was very, very emotionally supportive. He was very helpful with his advice. Now, he said to me, when I had this song recorded, that he would love to hear it. And that song is Woman, Woman. Now, I was thrilled by that in itself, of course. So when the song was cut, I sent it to him, and he listened to it, and he liked it. He liked it a lot. He even, in fact, told me that he's heard a few people cover his material over the last 30, 40 years that he wasn't all that particularly fond of. And he says he really liked my version of his song. And that really boosted me, like beyond description. This 60s icon not only took the time to get back to me, but he gave me a tremendous compliment. And then a few months after the fact, he actually called me personally. He actually took time out of his schedule and he called me. And I spoke with him for about 45 minutes to an hour, and he was just full of great advice and very supportive influence. I mean, he was just, he kept me on the beaten path. He kept me from walking away from doing what I'm doing. And I owe him a lot for that. I owe him a lot just for the fact that he was gracious enough to email me back, let alone a phone call. So I haven't actually physically met Gary, but before I die, that's definitely on my top five things that I need to do before I die, is I need to meet Gary personally and shake his hand and get to know him better.
You certainly have a touch of Russian glory, of pessimism, but nourished with your passion and just incredible artistry. You are forgiven for that, and I'm absolutely sure you will meet this person. Is he still active? Where is he living?
I believe he's living in Florida and around there, that area there. He is still touring. I believe he just did a tour in Australia, and I think he's home now. I haven't spoken to him for quite some time, but yeah, I think he's getting pretty close to retirement. He's been in the business for a very, very long time, and he still has a very large fan base. But I think he's probably come just about to the end of his road, where he, you know, that's just. I mean, I can't speak for him, so please don't take it that way. But that's just, yeah, I believe that's where it's going.
Well, be honest with you, this is never the end. It's just different phases, and you describing one phase naturally flowing into another one. But I have to say, there are very, very just rare opportunities in our modern world where personal interest from someone who already has it to talent which trying to find noble place in the world. And I'm so, so thrilled for you that your courageous patience lasted enough to find attention of such a wonderful artist as you're describing. I'm not personally familiar with his performances, but I certainly will pay attention now because of your description of it and your information about him. I also wanted to touch base on something which you mentioned before, which is hardly enough just for one program in terms of the times we're living in terms of superficial demands and expectation of something fast, loud, technically, mechanically, and I would say superficially sexually oriented, and somewhat deprivation of profound lyric of not only words, but actually subtlety in music itself. Regardless what genre this music is, there is a moment of starvation in classical music. Of course, I personally absolutely adore jazz, and part of our concert series in our company dedicated to jazz, and I feel that jazz is such a liberation of humankind, and many other well-established moments in music are just starving, as I said, because of this motoric, technical, modern technological production, where the faster and where the louder message flies, the better it becomes. So I certainly appreciate the fact that you did touch on that. There is no words can describe the complexity of your emotional journey. And I do hope that this is just one of a few programs which we are going to do together with listening to your songs. Again, being somewhat a bit pushy, listening to your own original compositions. But certainly this program generously opened gates to your world of music, your personality. Again, you being very handsome man and being so, so young. So I personally wish you the most of the success and self-satisfaction. And I do hope that somehow, perhaps we're here with our community, will have a joy to hear your performance.
Well, thank you so much, Lena. That's very kind, and I appreciate every word. And I very much appreciated you having me on your show.
Well, it is very mutual, and I will send you with not goodbye, but I would say musical until soon. And on this note, I will thank my guest whose talent and music charmed us, nourished us, moved us. And on this note, I just wanted to give him the opportunity to give us an information. Where can we get his CDs? Where can we find him in the internet world? We certainly found him in musical world. So,
well, I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
I
was going to say the easiest way to find me is just to look up R.F. Horn, H-O-R-N-E, on MySpace. Or you can go onto iTunes or CD Baby. But I recommend just to go to MySpace because all the different digital download links are right there. So if you just go to R.F. Horn on MySpace, you'll be able to click on any link that you'd like in the event you want to download.
Wonderful. I certainly will do that to hear more of your music. However, I'm privileged to have your CD. And again, with my most musical wishes to you and my warmest respect for your parents. Until soon, Ron.
Thank you, Lena. I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you so, so much. Warm thanks to BBS with another production of my program. I will see you, hear you, and feel you next Tuesday at the same time. And until then, please have a musical and lovely time.